Live from Burbank, California, where Kirstie Alley comes for dessert. It's the Marc Maron Show. And now he once sank himself to create a reef. Marc Maron.
Look at all the sea critters swimming in and out of me. Is that what you're saying, Jim?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying, Mark.
Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, need machines and pain sponges. How goes it? It is Friday. This is it. I'm looking forward to a weekend. I look forward more to the weekend, Jim, than I work. You know, when you have a job, the weekend tends to mean something. If you're just sitting around doing nothing, looking at the floor, sitting on the couch, watching repeats of American Idol or A&E shows or whatever those kids watch. I watched something on TV. I went Wondershowsen I watched the other day. That's peculiar.
Hooter Wudden?
Wondershowsen, I think it's called. Peculiar. It's peculiar television.
It sounds very German.
I enjoyed it. Vernon Chapman writes for it, our friend from San Francisco. It has all the cool kids on it. Dave Cross, Amy Poehler made guest appearances. There were some funny bits on it. I had no intention of talking about this. The point I was trying to make was that if you don't do anything, the weekend just is another 2 days of feeling guilty about yourself and about your lack of doing things. Am I right?
I guess so. If you don't have a job, I guess that's kind of puts a lot of people in a bad position.
We have
to say that.
Okay.
Kinda makes them depressed.
Yes.
A lot of people are unemployed right now. But hey, what's happening?
Buzzkill Earl. Come on, it's Friday. Can't we have a good time? Are you going to let me have a good time? Or are you going to drag this thing into the mud today?
I live for the weekend, Mark.
All right, well, let me tell people about who's on the show. We have a big show, big funny show. But first, we're going to do some informative, environmentally conscious, investigative documentary filmmaking. Chris Payne is going to be in studio to talk for a half an hour about something near and dear to your heart, unless you change your mind and decide that electric cars aren't that important to you and you start rambling about steam.
Hey, steam and electric are on the same level for
me. Thank God they're on the same level. I'd hate there to be a schism between steam and electric, and we get into an argument.
They
with
were both brought down by the similar forces.
Well, Chris Payne, the director of Who Killed the Electric Car, will be with us to discuss that. And we've got Dean Obadallah, the comedian, the Palestinian-Sicilian comedian. We've got Jim David, the comedian from the South who lives in New York, very funny. He used to be on Morning's Edition often, as did Dean. Katie Halper is a comedian, blogger, filmmaker, and the creator of Laughing Liberally, where, if you don't know, is tomorrow night at the Wadsworth Theater.
Are you going to be there?
I'm going to be there, Jim, along with Jim and Dean and Katie and Rick Overton and, you know, old Uncle Will Durst is going to be there to...
I've been Durst.
You've been great, and I've been Durst. And I've been dormant for 5 years. Thank God for Bush. Man, that saved his career, didn't it?
What about Reagan?
I love Uncle Will. Yeah, but there was a pretty big gap in there, you know, where Will was going on stage talking about Thanksgiving dinner at his family's house. Come on, you know the Durst. I've been through it with Will Durst. Well, we also have Scott Dalbus, who is a guy I met in front of the... I think I met him first at the Grove Theater. He was in front of the Grove Theater handing out pamphlets. He has issues with... he's literally protesting movie makers for weird reasons. But he's on a personal mission, and I thought he'd be an interesting guest. Here we go. Here's some email, Jim, and I think this addresses something that would be a nice segue into the electric car talk. Love your show. Hey, Mark, love your show. It looks like you, and particularly Jim, need to roll up your sleeves and start questioning Lori David again. I just saw An Inconvenient Truth here in New York, and not once during the film or at the end does it mention the awesome contribution that the meat industry makes to environmental pollution and global warming. This industry is responsible for one-third of all air pollution, and they don't even mention it in their supposed call-for-action film. Give them hell, Mark and Jim. You guys are awesome. Podcasting in the Bronx. That's from Matthew.
Good for you, Matthew.
We started to talk about this yesterday.
Yeah. Well, Lori David, she, on her site, you know, stopglobalwarming.com, I think that's it, she lists a group of contributors or people who are with her. And there's a lot of corporations, energy companies, gas companies, car companies, and you can't. They are not interested in anything alternative energy.
I don't want to pull back the curtain and show what is going on here. But what is going on is that Lori David And a lot of the people that are supporting the momentum behind Inconvenient Truth, this is the beginning, obviously, of the presidential campaign of Al Gore. They don't want to complicate it. They don't want to make it confusing. They think they have found something, and justifiably so. I'm not criticizing the Democratic Party per se, but I think what is going on here is Al Gore has got a certain amount of momentum around this scientific fact of global warming, and they think they have found something as terrifying as terrorism and more proactive to run on as a platform for the new Democratic Party and for President Gore, for Al Gore's presidential campaign. And I think Lori David, not unlike many wealthy patrons of politicians or people who want to get involved in the political momentum of a particular candidate or a particular cause, is doing just that. And I think that once she starts talking about the truth of the agricultural business and the meat business as being part of global warming, that they see it as complicating their message.
And the car business. She thinks she can cooperate with GM and Exxon into creating alternative energy sources and to stopping pollution. And it's, you know, it's baloney. It's a lie. It's like those coal commercials on TV. You have the 17-year-old kid talking about, hey, man, coal. What the hell? You know, this is BS.
But here's the interesting thing, and we can talk to Chris Payne about this.
Can I say that, BS?
Of course you can say BS. We'll talk to Chris Payne about it when he gets in here, and we talk about his film, Who Killed the Electric Car, is that it seems to me that part of this, I tried to talk to Pallast about this yesterday, but he says I'm crazy, is that I think part of the new industrial paradigm they're trying to create, the Democrats right now, by and large, is that we can bring industry to this country by producing ethanol, by producing biodiesel, by producing these agricultural alternatives to or additives to petroleum. So they're sort of trying to work in cahoots with the car manufacturers and the petroleum industry to reinvigorate the economic base of this country with this new industry and not seem too radical.
Well, I'll say it again. It's not in the car makers' interest to go away from the internal combustion engine. It's dirty, and it's dirty for on purpose.
But they're tanking out. I mean, do you see the numbers? Ford is tanking out. GM is tanking out. The hybrids are outselling them. The fuel-efficient models are outselling them.
But it's a hybrid. It still has an internal combustion engine attached to it.
Okay.
They'll never cooperate with going to a clean energy car because it means less parts and less dirt. And less replacement parts. And
less turnover.
You won't have dealerships making money off of oil changes and parts and everything else.
It's hard. Right, exactly. The planned obsolescence model doesn't hold for a car that all you really might need to do is change the battery and the tires occasionally, every 6 or 7 years.
I don't know how many parts an electrical engine has, but I'm sure it's almost as few as a steam engine. It has about 8 to 10 moving parts in it. Clutch, no transmission.
Right, exactly. Don't let lack of knowledge stop you from making a point. There's no reason to let that stifle our excitement. You know what I mean? You're not being paid to know that stuff.
You're damn right I'm not being
exactly.
paid to know anything.
And I'm telling you that right now. Let's do these jokes here. We don't want you to be caught off guard or ill-informed. So here's tonight's first edition of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. A report issued by the Food and Drug Administration says America's restaurants need to shrink food portions to fight obesity. However, since 64% of Americans are overweight, we as a society will probably just change fat ass to normal and go out for chili fries. Or we could make binging and purging hip again. Huh? Can we? Huh? Fat ass. I would have rethought that joke, I think, had I spent a little time with it. Americans consume 300 more calories a day than they did 15 years ago because it helps take their mind off the question, where did the last 15 years go? That's genius. That's a good one. Let's move on. The Academy of Sex and Relationships announced they're going to open a sex theme park in the heart of London. The park will feature tactile, is that it? Displays of life-size silicone models designed to stimulate interest in erogenous zones. Finally addressing the problem that most people ignore their genitals. Wow, come on, that looks so much better when I read it the first time. Rides will include, it's a hard world after all. The Tunnel of Lube, and the Tilt-O-Suck-It. Come on.
The Tilt-O-Suck-It.
Tilt-O-Suck-It? You can't lose with that. Was that all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Can
I just say one thing?
The guy who wrote that just came, hey, Tilt-O-Suck-It, and then wrote everything
around that.
Yeah,
build it around the punchline.
And it was worth it.
The Tilt-O-Suck-It.
In my mind, in my world, it's way worth it.
Oh, got a filthy head.
What's that?
I'm sorry. Was that on the air?
Yeah.
I thought we were done. Hey, what I was going to say, are we done? The Dixie Chicks is not a political cause, people. I'm glad that their album is successful and they've changed their disposition, their attitude, and they stood up for what they believe in. But do not send me emails saying, buy the Dixie Chicks record. Show the Republicans that you're different. You'll make those Republicans pay if you buy the Dixie Chick album. Come on. This is what makes us look retarded when we do stuff like that. All right, we'll be back with Chris Payne, Who Killed the Electric Car, is the film.
Years ago, there were more electrics on the road than there were gas cars. For many people, electric cars were the car of choice. They were quiet and smooth and could be charged at home. Gas cars, by comparison, required cranking and produced exhaust. As the 20th century gathered speed, the electric car lost momentum. Automatic starters, cheaper oil, and mass production gave the edge to the gasoline car. By 1920, the internal combustion engine had won the race for control of the roads, and the modern automobile age was born.
All right, that, of course, is from Who Killed the Electric Car. And I got to be honest with you, folks, I really had no idea about California's electric car program. I wasn't living here when it was born and when it died. Who Killed the Electric Car is a very personal movie. It sounds like just another documentary about how big business destroyed something good. It is that, but it is more. Because people love their electric cars. Given that they were not sold but leased, and it was a bold new idea when the forces that catalyzed to kill the electric car came together, the cars were ripped from the caring hands of their owners and destroyed over time. Chris Payne was one of those electric car owners, and he is the filmmaker behind Who Killed the Electric Car. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, thank you.
I'm so glad you're here, because it is an interesting movie, because it's a very personal, it's a very thorough documentary. You have testimonials from people like Mel Gibson, Peter Horton, regular people talking about how much they love their electric cars. You have Phyllis Diller talking about the original electric car. The point is that this technology was perfected, it was practical, and it was literally banished. And now they're talking about it again as if it's a new, unperfected thing.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So what is the history of the electric car? Because Jim here has been talking about it for months.
Well, I heard Jim earlier, and you're right. I mean, steam cars were as popular as electric cars and gas cars 100 years ago.
And reliable, too. Very reliable and safe.
Really? Did you drive one?
No. But the Doble steam... I don't want to take
ahead,
a turn. The Doble steam car in the mid-20s could start in less than 30 seconds in sub-zero weather, go 0 to 60 faster than internal combustion engines, and was very safe, and it weighed a ton.
Well, but I know by around 1906, it came down to the gas car and the electric car.
Right.
Because the gas car, you take your electric car, you charge it up at your home all night.
Right.
And as gas prices came down and they got the electric starter worked out, gas cars took over. And electric cars by the 20s were just being heaped and destroyed.
But this was primarily for the same greed and industrial reasons that happened today, is that they knew even then that they had a business in parts, they had a business in gas, they had a business in turnover, that the electric car wasn't going to afford them, correct?
Yeah, it was a different bunch of people would make money off the gas car than the electric car.
Okay, and the gas people won. And they're winning again. They keep coming back and destroying the world.
Well, they've been winning for a long time. The whole 20th century was sort of a victory.
How do we get rid of them, Chris?
Well, we're running out of oil.
Okay, well then, there you go. So talk about, let's go piece for piece. I just think it's amazing to me that they had this huge infrastructure built here in California. They literally had recharging stations built. Mm-hmm. The state must have lost a fortune when they decided to shut this down.
Yeah, I mean, billions were spent on the electric car program. And it came out of a really good idea, which is that everybody's dying of lung cancer from living in especially big cities like Los Angeles. Kids were having asthma.
Mm-hmm.
I think one in four kids under 25 have lesions on their lungs.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's terrible.
It is bad.
And the 70s were terrible. And by the end of the 80s, it was really, really getting bad again. So they said, we've got to do something. Let's do the electric car.
Okay.
And the car companies already knew how to do it. In fact, GM, I guess, made the mistake of showing an electric car at the LA Auto Show.
Right.
And the regulators go down there and went, oh, we knew you could do it.
Yeah.
Now you have to do it.
Right.
And they went, oh, we have to do it. No, we were just kidding. We can't do it. We can't do it. No, you have got to make these electric cars, and 10% of cars by 2003 will be electric.
That was something we're trying to regulate here in California.
That's a law they wrote.
Right.
It's 10%.
And then now let's talk about the powers that sort of, like, what fascinated me was that they made these cars. Saturn made them. Honda made them. Toyota made one as well.
Yeah.
And people had them. You had one.
Yeah, I had one. They were terrific.
And the weirdest thing is, it doesn't seem to matter how much money anybody had, because you talked to some very wealthy people who had these cars. They could not keep their cars.
Yeah.
They took the cars away from you.
I know. It was. We all thought, you know, even if a car, quote, fails,
yeah,
like they told us the electric car failed, nobody wanted it, it's a disaster. Usually you get to keep the car, like people have the Edsel Motor Club.
Right.
And they can go and we can all be nerds with our cars. These cars, they took them away from us. You can't have them. And then they began destroying the cars.
Honda and Toyota took theirs away, too?
They took them away, too.
They were all leased. All the car makers leased them?
Yes. That was part of their plan.
They wouldn't let you buy the car. See, that's weird, because they must have known that there was a possibility that this wasn't going to take, and they were just hedging their bets?
Well, they said it was a prototype car. They were just trying them out. But I think they were hedging their bets so that we're going to get this law turned around, and we're going to get our cars back.
That to me is amazing, because you talk to the engineers that designed the batteries, you talk to all the people that, even the people that sold these cars, and there is, it's across the board, they could have been successful, they were obviously cost efficient, they worked, they had a great amount of costliness to them, not costliness, they were cost effective. And they just took them away.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're going to play an ad for the original electric car. We're going to come back and talk about the forces that sort of converged on destroying the electric car. So why don't we play this advertisement, Bill?
How does it go without gas and air? How does it go without sparks and explosions? How does it go without gears or transmissions? How does it go, you will ask yourself. And then you will ask, how did we go so long without it? The electric car. It isn't coming. It's here.
Now, it's interesting in the film, and we're going to talk about this a little more when we come back from the break, was they didn't think that they could... They blame, on some level, the consumer didn't really latch on to this.
Right.
And we should talk about why after this. It's just because people are like, it's electric? I mean, it doesn't...
For one thing, that was the worst commercial ever made for any subject.
Really? I kind of liked it. But I think really Americans have a certain amount invested in... Right?
Yeah, but the electric car is faster than the, you know, most internal combustion engine.
But does it go...
Good, you could put a sound...
That's what it needed. It needed a sound effect. We'll be back with Chris Payne in a minute.
Gentlemen, I know you're all worried, and I agree, there's plenty to be worried about, like this solar power plant, already operational outside Los Angeles. Photovoltaic cells, they convert sunlight directly into electricity. Fluorescent, lasts 10 times as long as a conventional light bulb, uses only a quarter of the power. Super windows, insulate as well as 10 sheets of glass. An electric car, partially powered by solar panels. But the truth is, gentlemen, I'm not worried about any of these things. Because no one's ever going to know about them.
It's almost true. That's Robert Goulet from Naked Gun 2.5. That's in your film. Chris Payne is with us. Who Killed the Electric Cars? The movie. Opening at theaters when, Chris?
June 28th.
Okay, so now let's talk about that advertisement that we heard before, the television commercial.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the GM said they spent millions and millions and millions to promote the cars, but that commercial, which is featured in our film, looks like an outtake from a 1960s movie like Fail Safe. All mm-hmm. the people are burned into the sidewalk, and there's literally an explosion in the middle of the ad, like everybody's dead.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of their characters makes the point in the movie, it's like, where's the, you know, most Americans never even heard of the electric car.
I didn't.
Yeah, like you didn't, and most people haven't. That's why we made the film, to like let people know, hey, this technology exists today. We don't have to wait for hydrogen fuel cell or whatever.
I knew that they were out there, but it seemed like this weird kind of boutique-y kind of thing. I had no idea that the major automakers were behind it. I had no idea there was an infrastructure out here or a law that was going to design to guarantee that 10% of the automobiles on the road in this state anyway were to be electric. And I guess part of the fear, let's start to talk about the themes of the movie, which is what were the forces that came together to kill this electric car? And one of them was the fear on behalf of the legislators that if they did it in California, they'd have to do it everywhere.
Right.
And why is that a bad thing? Why did that turn out to be negative?
Well, you know, people make money the old-fashioned way, and the vested interests that make money off of oil and the way and the internal combustion engine, like you guys mm-hmm. were talking about, that's the way they like to make money. They have their margins built in. They know how to do it. So when they saw that this initiative in California for the electric car was catching on, Massachusetts and New York and the Northwest and other states were like going, hey, we should do this. They got this thing has got to be killed now in California. So they came down hard and to dismantle the law. And before cars even hit the ground in Massachusetts on the East Coast, for example, they never made it.
So the fear was that this could really usurp the oil paradigm?
Oh, totally.
Wow.
I mean, the ultimate alternative fuel is electricity.
Right.
We make it here. You can make it totally renewably. And once you do that, and I think transportation is 60% or something like of the oil company's profit. It's huge.
You could make it, theoretically, if they design gyms properly, we could be generating just tons and tons of electricity just from treadmills and people wasting energy across the country. Right, Jim? This is a bold idea. Get on board.
Okay. I'm on board with it.
All right. So now let's talk about you didn't sound like you're on board, really.
Hey, I'm on board.
All right, let's talk about the other forces that that came down, because there was not only the car companies, but actually the legislature, the government did as well, at the behest of the car companies, or.
Well, I mean, the government, the federal government.
Yeah.
Yeah, the federal government came in. The car companies basically ended up suing California, saying you can't force us to put a certain kind of car on the road. You can't force us to do miles per gallon in a state level. It's got to be a federal law. So our favorite friends of the Bush administration joined the lawsuit against California, and California said, okay, we give up. There's too much pressure. We can't fight the car companies and now the federal government.
Oh, and there's so much emotions in this movie. There were legislators that were crying that realized the urgency of it and just the excitement of people that own these cars. And literally, there are people in the film that became electric car activists that went to the lots where they were holding these about-to-be-junked electric cars and stood out on the street protesting.
I know. It's crazy, huh?
It isn't crazy, because when you really think about the vision for the future and how to save the planet, especially when we have factual evidence that we are responsible for exacerbating the climate change, it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And I just I hope that your film resonates. Now, what about the consumer is held to fault as well in your film a bit?
Well, it's true, and we argued about that a little bit, but we said, you know, consumers are part of it, and mm-hmm. basically when these cars came out in the middle of the 90s, people were in love with SUVs, and that's what everybody was buying, and people weren't going, well, electric car, I don't know, and unfortunately, when industry says we can sell you a really high profit margin thing, and all you see on television are commercials for the SUV, for example, and your neighbors are buying it, there's a lot of herd mentality, and what it takes for things to change is consumers have got to say, I'm going to do something else.
Right.
And I think the good news is that we've reached the tipping point now. I think people have had it. I mean, the car companies are going bankrupt here. People are going, oh, electricity, maybe I should think about that. And
are they seriously thinking about it again? Because it seems like you had several engineers in your film. The guy who designed that battery, that guy seems like a real interesting guy. He seems like he's worthy of a film unto himself.
Yeah.
The old cat, what was his name?
Stan Oshinsky.
Yeah. He seemed like a real interesting guy, you know, and he had this battery. The technology is definitely there.
To make the electric car go 300 miles before another charging.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if a car doesn't go that far, you know, it turns out that electric car does 90% of what you need, because most trips aren't 300 miles.
Now, what do you see, Chris Payne, in terms of what's happening now? I see something that's happening is that there seems to be a middle road being taken here with these ethanol, with biofuel, biodiesel, that this is not really solving the problem as much as it is accommodating the power that is the oil companies and the auto manufacturers. Yes?
No, absolutely. I mean, ethanol, for example, it works pretty well in Brazil where you have sugarcane.
Uh-huh.
But in the U.S., it's corn-based ethanol. So
yeah.
There's two big industries, agribusiness that benefits. I've heard you guys talk about this on your show.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it helps Detroit because it's basically using the same internal combustion engine that they're already building.
That's what Jim was saying.
It's like, you guys, you can drive cars as an appliance, just a battery and a motor. It's the simplest thing.
Yeah.
And you can go faster than an internal combustion engine. You can't make quite as much noise, but you can put some sound effects on it if you're, you know, you want that.
Yeah.
And the good news is that all the electricity can come from the U.S.
Now why is the car industry so against that, though? If they retool, can't they still make as much money servicing these things and building them? You know,
if they make them crappy,
tricking them out like as they do, you know, internal combustion engine cars.
It's just not what they're used to doing. Yeah, I mean, the servicing the electric car almost never happens. The only thing that ever really goes wrong.
Oh, see, there that's throwing a wrench in the whole thing.
And it's
too good a product.
It's you have batteries and you have a motor.
So that's why if you can make them independently, or people sell kits independent of, you know, car companies,
right?
And if independent companies grow up around that. And you can circumvent the GM and
I imagine people will. But what you're basically saying is the way the paradigm is set up now to service engines that are designed to screw up, service dirty engines that require oil change. I mean, the amount of people, the trickle down of how many people are making money from this, not just car companies, but all the way down to the guy at the 76 station or the guy that even wipes windows. I mean, there is an entire world of money being generated because of these crappy cars that we have now.
Well, that's why, you know, like the internal combustion engine is the ultimate printer.
Yeah.
And the toner that you have to keep buying for these things are gasoline and infinite supplies of like tune-ups and something went wrong with the engine. Electric car, you know, 5 years, I never had a problem with it.
It was so infuriating watching that GM exec, I think he was a GM exec in your documentary, calling the electric engine antiquated, you know? It's like, it's been around twice as long as the internal combustion engine, and it's not dangerous, and it's not dirty, and it's not polluting.
Well, the funny thing about that is that actually that was the head of the oil lobby.
Oh, really?
And he goes, the oil lobby guy says, don't try this electric car thing. It's antiquated technology. And,
yeah.
You know, meanwhile, we got...
And it's here and it's ready to go. I think that what we have to do is have the American sense of masculinity, we have to retool that along with the car. See, what we have to do is make men confident in just having cars that don't make any noise, but let the public know, say women who are standing on street corners, that they can go much longer without recharging.
I think if we could get Phyllis Diller to sell electric cars, we can get the...
Ha!
You know, the cruisers, the street cruisers going for it.
So you can't get these cars anywhere.
No, you can't. But you can get these little ones that go, which are a good option for a lot of people, that go like up
the
neighborhood cars.
The golf cart-looking cars.
And then they're making these Priuses or the conversion kits so you can plug in your hybrid car.
Right.
And then, so suddenly now your first 60 miles is all electricity. That's terrific.
So we're moving towards it, kind of?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, I think that this is going to be kind of interesting in the next few years to see how this pans out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised Ford and GM, they're going to start talking electric again.
Yeah, they're going to have to. I mean, I think that it seems to me that there's enough people that will still want to have fuel-based cars, but they should at least accommodate those of us that don't.
Yeah, I mean.
And that's a good start. So maybe that'll happen.
Well, it's great that you have us on the show here because, you know, mainstream press is not covering this movie. And if people want to go see it, you figure that two out of four ads are for cars. So
right.
The local news station doesn't want to, like, upset their car dealerships too much. So this has got to be, this film, for it to succeed and really for these ideas to get out there, is very much kind of an underground movement.
Well, you can go to markmaron.com and link to it. I think it's electriccarmovie.com. What is there?
It's actually Who Killed the Electric Car.
Whokilledtheelectriccar.com.
Exactly.
And there's a link to that on my site. I believe Chris Payne, was great talking to you. We'll have you back maybe after, when the electric car starts to be marketed again, in sort of a victory interview.
Anytime. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, take care. We will come back with Jim David, the comedian, funny friend of show.
Now, Chock Full of Nuts is that heavenly coffee with Mark Maron.
I used to like Chock Full of Nuts when I lived in the East Coast.
Why do I constantly respond to these things you say? I don't know how not to have a conversation. I don't want to detach and pretend like you're not there, so I react.
Well, you know, I've written around 400 or 500 of these, and they make no sense after the second.
So I'm going to quit responding to them. Look, folks, I'm going to be with my next guest at Laughing Liberally. That's tomorrow night at the Wadsworth Theater in Westwood. You can go to ktlk.com for information. Right now, you can call 877-520-1150 and say, Justin, I want two tickets. And Justin will give you two tickets if you ask him, if you're the first caller. That's 1-877-520-1150. Justin, Mark said to call and tell you to give me some tickets, and you'll get some tickets. If you come to the theater, you drive down there, you drive to the window or walk up to the window, park your car first. Don't drive right up onto the thing. But walk up to the window and say, I'd like two tickets, please. Condi. You get half price off. How do you like that? See, there's a fun code word. Do you get to play spy games?
Swordfish.
Right now
Condi.
In the studio. Condi. Who's that voice? You know that voice. I have known Jim David for years. He and I used to be two of the only left-leaners that got asked back on Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn.
Ain't that the truth?
Right? You've had your own Comedy Central Presents.
Indeed.
The Friar's Roast of Rob Reiner.
Indeed.
He's appeared on Bravo and all other kinds of stuff, and he's going to be at Laughing Liberally tomorrow night with me. The New York Post says this about Jim. Jim David's stand-up comedy was as effective as any I've heard in a club in the past year. Why would you put that on your website?
Because it's a review, and of course it was written back in the 20s. But you've got to go with what you've got.
You have so many great blurbs, but as I was reading your blurbs on your website, I get to that one, I'm like, what's that guy really saying?
He didn't see anybody. He'd actually seen the original Phyllis Diller talking about the electric car.
Oh, it was just so funny. I was like, you might not have to leave.
I know,
that
it's
one
pretty pathetic.
No, it's not,
it's
pathetic. How have you been? You look great.
I'm fine. I'm great. Everything's fine. I'm making brilliant and biting comments denouncing the hypocrisies of our times, cleverly juxtaposed with genital references nationally.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do
it.
You
gotta wrap it around your penis.
There you go.
Yes, why not?
There you go.
Well, I heard that our lovely president today is backing a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage.
Yeah,
doesn't he have anything better to do?
No, because it's another distraction. It's like the distraction du jour, mm-hmm. and it's another way to get the fundamentalists out to vote, because they say, well, if we don't go vote, the homosexuals are going. Oh, in my home state in North Carolina, Mark, there is this guy named Vernon Robinson, African-American gentleman, not that matters.
Oh, he's crazy.
You know who I'm talking about?
I do know.
He has a new ad that's all over the internet, which is if you vote for his opponent, then North Carolina and the United States will be nothing but a siesta for illegal immigrants and homosexuals.
This guy's like a black Klansman.
I know. But that sounds like a great weekend to me. You know what I mean?
He paints a nice picture. Yeah.
and not the truth. But it's just amazing what he does.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely. Yeah. And no one even gives a crap about this president anymore, except the people that'll respond to this.
Well, because they've been knocking on his door and saying, well, now he's not doing what he said he was going to do, and that's why we put him in. And if he doesn't do it, well, we're just going to have to stay home.
That's right. And it's sort of a misconception that they put him in. They're a minority in this country, and I think if most people were hard pressed to make a decision about whether or not to amend the Constitution to deny gay people of their rights.
It's not just that. It's just that most people, when you say they're a minority in this population, you're right. The majority of the population is church going. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But they're not these fanatical nutcases who, you know,
they're not full of hate.
They're not full of hate. Well, I mean, it's not so much hate as it's boredom. There's nothing to do in Topeka, Kansas.
So this is what they focus on?
Yeah, this is it. You know, and so they have to, you know, they don't know any gay people. They don't know any. They don't. I mean, of course, they all have a church choir director, so they know one.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But I mean, it's like they have nothing else to do, and so this is it. Look, it's like classic, you know, fear mongering. You know, it's like we can't focus on the problems like you were talking about, global warming.
Right.
We can't focus on the fact that Iraq is a total disaster. We can't focus on the fact that the Republicans have rigged elections and, you know, subverted the entire democratic process. We can't focus on the spying. We can't blah, blah, blah. What do we do? Let's get the fags.
Yeah. Let's make the homosexuals unhappy. Well, let's ruin their lives.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, and not only that, they think that, you know, that the, I mean, look, I'm in a relationship 18 years. I had no idea that my personal life is so controversial. I mean, we have the most boring life, right? We get up in the morning, we have cocktails, and then we do brunch, and then we go to schools and recruit,
and then
we plot the destruction of the traditional family for about 2 hours it takes.
Your lifestyle is threatening his marriage.
That's correct. And then we do drugs and go dancing. And when the crystal meth wears off, we call it an early night. 2 days later.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, there's all these anti-crystal meth commercials on television.
Yeah.
The only problem is finding a crystal meth user who still has a television.
Right.
But, folks.
He's just getting started.
Oh, yeah, I know.
If he has one.
I know. But, you know, it's like whatever.
Do you go, well, this is, I just had this weird, I think what you said is true, is that a lot of them don't know gay people, or if they do know gay people, they don't know that they're gay. And I think that a lot of times in smaller communities, if a few people were just out there saying, we're just normal people. I mean, what the hell is this a problem? That maybe it would change their mind.
It would change their mind, but it's very difficult in small communities for you know, gay people to be out without running the risk of having their tires slashed. And that's literally the truth.
Or being beat up.
Or being, having their house bombed. Or,
yeah.
Oh, really? I mean, you know, and at my age, if I get beat up by a bunch of high school kids, I'm really embarrassed.
Yeah, I would think.
That's not a good thing.
It's not.
Like, oh, God. At least I want to get beat up by a peer.
Yeah. Someone on your level.
Exactly.
So I haven't seen you in a little while. How's New York been without me? Is that all right?
New York misses you. New York is sorry. Sorry that we lost your subversion to the City of Angels.
Oh,
we're
man.
Very, very sorry about
so
that.
So are you still getting, are those guys still being bullies over at the cellar? Are you still dealing with
most of them don't hang out there too much anymore.
See, they're too big for it? Norton and Quinn and DePaulo?
They're all around.
Still,
you know what I mean?
Giving you a hard time?
Nah, they don't give me a hard time too much anymore because I come in and I do my show and then I leave. You know what I mean? I can't bear it.
And you know what's great about you is that,
that
you kill. They got nothing on you.
No.
I mean, that was always the amazing thing is these guys who are, I think, you know, actually not, they're not sociopaths. They're good-hearted guys when you get right down to it. But
a couple of them are not.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them who are not good guys.
Okay,
you know,
let's just not leave it at that.
The lily.
But the great thing about you is that, you know, you get up there and it's like, bam! Now, you know, argue with that. Say whatever you want to say about me, but I just killed. See you later.
There you go.
And, hey, that's good.
There's nothing. You know, if you're a comedian, there's nothing that a great audience response will not put whip right into shape.
And that's
you know that.
Right.
If you have a bad day, you know what I mean, and then you go on and you have a good set. Hey, life is worth living again.
That's what they're there for
yeah,
us to
exactly.
use as batteries.
That's right.
For our well-being.
To channel our rage.
Exactly.
That's why you're really going to have fun doing this show Laughing Liberally tomorrow
yeah.
night because
yeah.
we've done it twice in New York. It packed Town Hall, which is, you know, a big Broadway
nice
theater.
Room. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a great room. And you've done that, right?
No.
Oh, you've never done Town Hall?
I haven't.
Oh, okay.
I'm small time.
No. No, please. What are
all
you kidding me?
Yeah,
you're nationally
yeah.
known. My cousin, who has the hots for you in North Carolina, was actually, she, you know, lost her cookies when you went
Devastated.
Off the air.
Was she?
Oh.
I got to get her hooked up with this one. So we'll be back with Jim David.
All
We're
right.
also going to have Katie Halper come in here. She's also a comedian on the show. Dino Adala is here. So it's going to be funny. Time. We'll be back. Stay with us.
And now he still thinks Batwoman is straight. Mark Maron.
They're going to cut down on portions in restaurants. That's what they're recommending people to do. I think it's a good idea.
Oh, well, sure.
I think it's ridiculous.
Everybody's too fat.
Fat
country.
But initially I thought, is it a question of self-control? Why should it be the restaurant's responsibility to train us to eat less? But the truth of the matter is, when I see a mountain of food on the plate, I don't want to waste it. The thought of it being thrown away means that I have to eat all of it.
Plus, the restaurant will make more money. Save a lot of money.
If they start skimping on portions to help people out?
Yeah.
Well, they should sell it that way to those people.
But where does that leave the all-you-can-eat buffet?
Those are for a certain type of people, and I think those should just exist.
They really do eat all you can eat.
Dude, I've been to some of those buffets where I've like on the road or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you see people that are so fat.
And then they get in the pool, people head for higher ground.
Oh, my God. We were at it. My friend Pat and I were at a barbecue the other day, my wife and I, and there was like, I just saw this fat lady,
And now look, okay, I don't want to be rude, but I saw this fat person, like, they plopped down a bucket of chicken and they went right to it and she's just sitting there eating it, and I felt like I should say something. But you can't do that.
No, you can't.
You can't walk up to people and go, really? I mean, really? It's wrong, right?
I mean, really.
Really,
madam. I mean, please, could you possibly consume less?
That's Jim David, and now in the studio with us, Dean Obadalla is actually one of the funniest Palestinian Sicilian guys working in the business today.
I'm the top five.
Yeah, yeah. In the last while, he's been honored with the Bill Hicks Spirit Award for thought-provoking comedy. He's performed his one-person show, I Come in Peace, at this year's New York Fringe Festival. He also tours with Scott Blakeman, a Jew, in their stand-up for peace performances at colleges around the country. He's also on the Laughing Liberally show tomorrow night with myself and Jim David at the Wadsworth Theater. Welcome back to the show, Dean.
Thanks for having me. I'm the Middle Eastern flavor in this show. I'm the hummus of this show. I'm going to be the falafel side dish.
Yeah, did you, like, when you come into town, do you hook up with the other Arab comics?
I do.
The other four?
I'm the top five in my group in America right now. It's me, Ahmed, who's actually outside, Aaron Cater, Maz Jobrani, who's Iranian, close enough.
Yeah, and then there's, who's the other kid, Napolitano,
Nasri Malak?
No, not Nasri Malak. The guy I just work with Ahmed, and now I'm spacing. Who is it? Sam Tripoli. Sam Tripoli, who's not even Arab.
He's not even Middle Eastern or something, or Armenian or something.
Yeah, but the woman who owns the comedy store said he looked Arab, so he's like, I'm sticking with it. She thinks I'm Arab. I'm getting spots. I'm going to play it out. And he does the Arab shows.
He does. It's helped some comics' careers.
I'm going to change my name to Najim Bejravi.
Oh, yeah. You're gonna that's going to work for you.
Oh, no kidding.
So, wait. I didn't realize this, though. I went to your website. I'm going to everyone's website now.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very smart... you present yourself in a very interesting way on the website.
Oh, I do. In a suit and tie?
The Dean of Comedy.
No. Dean of Comedy. Not the Dean. That's
all right,
too arrogant. Just Dean. No, I made a distinction on purpose. It's DeanofComedy.com.
But I had no idea you were a lawyer.
I was a lawyer.
There's many comic lawyers. What was the decision there? Did you get disenchanted? Did you feel like it was all a lie? Or you just say, I need more attention? What happened?
The other lawyers in my firm, seriously... So there was a funniest lawyer competition, New Jersey Bar Association, and they came up to me as a group and they go, you should do this. And I think that was honestly their way of saying, you suck at being a lawyer. You're like the worst lawyer in this firm. Maybe you can use your stupid sense of humor to make some money. I swear, they came to me. I'm like, really?
Uh-huh.
And I always like making people laugh. So I said, okay. And I did it. And it just, the bug bit.
That was it?
I started doing open mics and... It's been a miserable life ever since.
Yeah, well,
but I'm here in L.A. doing a show with you and Jim David Saturday night and Will Durst. And what a great lineup. Rick Overton and Katie Halper.
That's great how he weaved that in. You know what I mean? Like, we're having a conversation about being a lawyer. And bam, we're pitching the bit. We're pitching the show.
We're trying to sell tickets. We have like 8 people.
No, stop it.
That's not true.
Come on, I heard it was 800.
It is 800.
I'm kidding.
Is that what they keep saying?
This is gonna be like Woodstock tomorrow night. Let's get real.
A lefty Woodstock.
I'll be honest with you, though. As a lawyer, there were other lawyers who did comedy, and if you ever wonder about whether you made the right choice, just go find Al Lubell in Union Square.
Talking to himself,
wearing his sweatpants. Look,
I carried his clothes in a bag. I just had the conversation today with Ahmed.
You know what's funny, though? Al Lubell was arguably one of the funniest bastards in the world. It's just so close to the bone. He is so self-involved, and you know, when you watch him, I don't know if you know.
He was just on Letterman.
Good, yeah. Well, that's what happens. He'll come out of nowhere, he'll shave, and he'll do his thing.
And do Letterman.
Yeah.
He's been on Letterman like 6 times. He was on Letterman like a month ago.
So self-involved. And you watch him, and there's part of you that's laughing. The other part's like, oh, my God.
He did this joke where he said, I'm so lazy, I don't even have a punchline. That's not the joke, but I mean the way that he did it was so perfect.
He's very funny. He used to close with that "I'm irritating" song. Do you know the Soul song?
Yeah, he does it still.
Does he still?
I saw him at the Improv in New York, dude, not too long ago, maybe a few months ago. The whole song.
Look, he's all full of the beans, Dean. He's young. He's got his guns. He's writing new material. He's like, he's still doing it. Kevin Meaney's still closing with "We Are the World." Come on, people. You wait 15 years down the line.
I'm angry now. Come on. I'm replacing. I'm gonna be the Arab Mark Maron in New York, like bitterly screaming at people. You know who I am.
Have they asked you to do that show yet?
Which one?
The morning show? Maybe you should go ask him for a job at Air America.
I would take it a second. I'd have you on, though.
A lot?
You had me on your test week. This is the third studio I followed you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're on the lam.
I love you, man. I think it's great that your people are doing comedy now.
It's better than the alternative, okay? But let's keep in perspective here, okay?
The Jews had this market cornered for years. It was just black people and Jewish people doing comedy.
Arabs Arabs doing comedy, you're going to guarantee some audience because at least the FBI guys will be there.
Right. ATF.
You guys draw a lot of people, though. Do you do those Arab comedy shows with these guys?
We do, right? We do some of the shows. They do Acts of Evil. We do some of the New York Arab American Comedy Festival, which we did in L.A. in January at the Laugh Factory. But we've done a bunch of shows. And if you go to the cities with a lot of Arabs...
Yeah. Like Dearborn, Michigan?
Oh, my God. Dearborn is Mecca. Dearborn, yeah. Like, you pray
yeah,
towards
you know,
Dearborn.
I was actually talking to somebody, and I said, why are so many Arabs in Dearborn? And he said, we came for the food.
Really?
And I just, yes, that's what he said. We came for the food. And I just thought, somebody sitting in Pakistan going, the hummus here is very bad.
Yeah, we gotta go
I
to
know
Dearborn.
A place where the hummus grows from the ground. It is called Dearborn in Michigan.
How far is that from Detroit?
Very close.
Like it's very close? Do you know why there's so many Arabs there?
Yeah, because Ford Motor Company was there, and they took unskilled labor, and they had all these immigrants who worked at Ford Motor Company getting jobs. That's why.
And they brought their families with them and reached out to people. Where are most of them from?
A lot are from Lebanon. Lebanese are the biggest amount of Arab Americans in the country anywhere, and Dearborn's huge, but also a lot of Iraqis up there. They fled to there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
After the first Gulf War?
After all, yeah, the first Gulf War a lot. Yeah, that's where they were voting from there. If you remember during the last Iraq elections, they go up there, let them vote. Up in Dearborn for mm-hmm. Prime Minister.
I don't know a lot about Palestinian heritage, and yet you're half Palestinian.
My father's Palestinian from Palestine. Yes.
It's just like you know, as a Jew, growing up as a Jew, we were
you're Jewish.
I am. Sorry.
I'm out of here. What kind of show is that? Yeah, I can't work with you people.
You have a Jewish guy. You have a fella who is gay here. You have a man who is strangely a cantankerous liberal Germanish type of fella.
Atheist.
Yeah, atheist. Yeah. Well, these aren't religious beliefs.
I thought he was the censor. He's part of the show. He's just like staring at us.
No, he's very
I'm staring funny. At you because I'm just... I'm,
he's taking it in.
Yeah. He's taking it in.
But but I was brought up to believe Palestinians were bad.
It's true. They're horrible people, but I hide it through comedy. You've got to use what you've got.
You want to laugh? When I was growing up in North Carolina, uh-huh. I lived next door to a Jewish family,
yeah.
And they were great, and my parents never told me anything bad about Jews. They always just said they don't believe that Jesus that we do, and that's it. There was no judgment, but I heard not one word about Palestinians or Arabs or anything. Not a word. Mm. I mean, like when I was, you know, there, it just wasn't on the radar at all.
It's emerged over the last few years. I mean, it's truthfully growing up, nobody knew where Palestine was or where it may have been and anything about it, but it's been an interesting experience. And the audiences are intrigued, especially liberal progressive people, like, oh, Palestinian, what's your father like? You know, and people say interesting things when I tell them I'm Arab. Like, oh, they try to be nice. Like, oh, you're Arab. Wow, I love hummus. Stuff like that. You know?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing that there's a schism within the liberal community and within the Jewish community is that you have a new wave of liberal Jews who are Palestinian or sympathetic to the Palestinians' plight. And then you have these old school liberal Jews who are like, you know, Israel at all costs. And they turn out to be sort of Spartan in their belief system. And there's a real sort of, you know, generational fight going on.
The only thing I would beg of people who are Jewish, who are extremely compassionate people, I've done just a show last night at Hillel, a Jewish group at UC Santa Barbara. Mm. If they apply the same ethics and morals to every issue that makes them liberal on American government policy to the Middle East, we'll find so much more common ground. Then Israel's always right and the Palestinians are always wrong. And if I applied everything, it's Palestinians are always right and Israel's always wrong, they'll never find common ground. There's so much more where the two people can coexist. And the recent polls show 65% of both Palestinians and Israelis, in a poll taken after Hamas's victory, showed 65% of both sides believe in two-state solutions side by side living together.
It's going to have to be like that.
There's no choice. No one's going anywhere. There's millions on each side.
Again, this is hilarious.
Yeah, but it's funny if people hate each other, though.
It is. Or a conflict is, maybe a sitcom like Everybody Loves Ramadan on WB.
I love when we start talking about this because it's like, come to the comedy show because there's going to be more of this. We're going to talk about Palestinian-Israeli relations all night long.
But it will be in the form of a joke.
Yes, in the form of a joke. Jim David, Dino Badala are here tomorrow night laughing liberally. We're going to give away another set of tickets in just a minute. Is that Ahmed? Ahmed. Who let him in? Does he have a bomb? I can't hear him. We got to get you in here for a second.
We can give him away.
Give him away, Ahmed.
He's an Egyptian. Give him away.
All right. We'll be back in a second. We'll give away the tickets. But, you know, we got to do this, too. Jim, you seem like they brought it up. You're a little quiet, a little pensive.
Yeah.
You got something on your mind? What do you say we give the old Wheel of Anger a spin?
Yeah, okay.
And the wheel lands on... What the hell is this? Emotional support animals?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's coming up, too. Stay with us. It's the Mark Maron Show.
He makes his own gravy. Mark Maron.
You've used that one before.
I have?
Yes. Oh, man. Now we're starting to repeat things. Katie Halper will be out here in a minute. She is a comic and blogger and filmmaker and one of the creator or the person who came up with Laughing Liberally, which is tomorrow night at the Walford Theater down there in Santa Monica. You can call right now, 877-520-1150, and say, Justin, dude, Maron says give me two tickets, and he will give you two tickets. 877-520-1150. If you come down to the theater... If you need to know where that is, you can go to KTLK.com and check it out. It's actually at 11301 Wilshire Boulevard in Westwood, the Wadsworth Theater. If you're doing the walk-up thing and you say Condi to the person who is selling you tickets, you will get half-price tickets. Dig that. I'm going to give away one more set as we got in the last half hour. In studio, Dean Obadalla, Palestinian-Sicilian comedian. I'm sorry, I set you up like that, right?
It's all the time.
It's all right, though, right?
It's fine. That's what I am.
All right. Jim David, comedian from the South, lives in New York now. Sometimes talks about gay things, right? You got mad at me once, and
I get mad at you?
I think I insinuated, like I don't remember what I said, but I certainly didn't mean it. But it had something to do with misusing the word gay.
I have no recollection whatsoever.
Thank God.
As long as you cleaned up afterwards, I'm fine.
I think we made up. I don't know if it got that filthy, but right now. We're here with Jim, and with the Wheel of Anger, we have spun it, and we've got emotional support animals.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right.
Mark?
Yeah.
Before I get on to emotional support animals, can I just say this?
Mm-hmm.
Smokers need to start dying faster. I'm sorry you're all addicted and stuff, and you got into it when you were young and stupid, but hey, I never told you to go to that Morrissey concert.
All right.
The fact is, every time one of you butt burners takes a cigarette break outside your place of work or at the beach or in a park, you're robbing me. You're sticking your Chesterfield 100 deep into my chest and robbing me of my right to breathe fresh, clean air. I ask you, what makes you think you have the right to force me to walk a gauntlet of secondhand smoke every time I wish to support my local mom and pop and get an extra purchase of electrified nipple clamps?
Yeah.
Or walk into a bar and yell, "All you pussy bikers suck." If you want to immerse yourselves in a cloud of toxic gas, go to Arby's and sit next to Paul Sorvino. Besides, the rest of us are already paying out our polyp-laden wazoos and tax dollars just to keep you losers on life support long after you should have dropped dead on the golf course. And no, it does not make it all right if you ask, "Mind if I smoke?" Hell no. Mind if I crap in your mouth? Which, of course, brings me to today's Wheel of Anger subject, emotional support animals. But before I go on, I just want to make this public service announcement. To the owner of the brown Humvee with the license plate, Spesh 1, you're neither special nor the only one driving a 6-ton Panzer in Burbank. You're only a putz. A big putz in a brown car that pollutes, wastes precious resources, and looks like a big turd on wheels. My wish is that one morning during your post-crispy cream nap, somebody welds you shut inside your Hummer with nothing but a bag full of pretzels and airdrops you over Haditha, where you can help the eager locals recreate the last scene from Last scene from Day of the Locust. Edit that out later. And finally, to the guy who sent that email with the heading Albuquerque Diaper Headsman Connector, thanks for the note. At first I thought it was spam. Thank goodness I had the presence of mind to read the whole message. Now I know more about Albuquerque Diaper Headsman Connector than I ever did before. Thank you. And now you can look forward to my reply, Bloat Universal Scarce Borg Abernathy.
Jim, I'm sorry, but we're running out of time on this one. We have guests in the studio. Now, you never got to the emotional support animals. Well, I was looking forward to that.
That's all right, Mark. You know, I never had anything to say about emotional support animals anyway. That was just a clever narrative device.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for playing along, hippie.
Uh-huh.
You've just taken a ride on my Wheel of Anger. I'm Jim Earl, and you've been Earled.
Jim, I got to be candid with you, and you guys can feel free to get involved in this conversation.
What?
Now, I know that some of these Wheel of Angers, these are obviously your real feelings, and you really are one of those people that don't think that smokers should be allowed to smoke outside either?
No. The hell no. You spend all day in a crappy cubicle in your office, and then you walk through the entrance to get some sunlight and fresh air, and these... These pigs are out there puffing away, and you have nowhere to go. You have no escape from cigarette smoke.
You can't walk another 10 feet or have them walk another 10 feet?
Why should I walk another 10 feet to get away from their toxic fumes?
Because they apparently it bothers you.
They should go to a cell somewhere.
Yeah. Do you hear that, Laughing Andy? Do you hear this? This is what you call liberal fascism.
But they could be offended by, you know, your hair. Or your looks.
Yeah,
they could be offended by that.
They don't have to inhale that.
It's not going to kill them either.
P.S. I loved the reference to the final scene of The Day of the Locust because that's where Donald Sutherland jumps up and down on this little boy until he bleeds to death. It's the most horrifying moment.
Then he gets ripped apart, doesn't
he? Yeah. And that's why I love Hollywood.
I know.
What a place. So, listen, Dino Vidala. Tomorrow night with me and Jim David, Laughing Liberally, and Katie Halper. I'm not going to call her Janet anymore. Will Durst, Rick Overton is going to be there. Is that the lot of it? There's going to be video presentation.
It's a great show.
With Janine Garofalo and there's some other stuff.
And Sam Cedar from Air America.
I know Sam. He does a show on this network.
That is
right
correct.
Before our show that we do here.
That is correct.
Sam's one of the good guys.
Yeah.
We will be back with Katie Halper. Look, I don't even smoke anymore. I just
Cigars.
I don't smoke anything. I quit that 2 months ago.
You're a poser.
Huh?
Poser.
What do you mean I'm a poser? Listen to you. Self-righteous, strident man.
Poser.
I'm not a poser.
Poser.
We'll be back.
Okay, he's not a poser. Mark Maron.
I'm not a poser. I forgot to mention, well, I actually didn't know. I kind of knew, but I didn't have it on my list. Shang is also on the show.
Have not heard that name in a while. Shang.
You remember Shang? He used to be Shangri. I'm Shangri.
I don't remember that. No.
Shang. Shangri. I remember him. Yeah, I saw him have a meltdown at the San Francisco Comedy Competition, but that was a long time ago, and that made everybody meltdown. You remember? He's a funny guy. He's Shangri. James Adomian is going to also be at the show, who does a Bush. The Bush impression, and in mere moments, Katie Halper is going to be with us. But right now, I wanted to give this guy some airtime. I met Scott Dalbus outside of the Grove Movie Theater. He was handing out pamphlets with complaints he has about films, and he was having people sign petitions to initiate some sort of legal action against certain movie distributors. He seemed like an interesting local character, so I asked him to be on the show. Are you there, Scott Dalbus?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so now let's. You founded an organization, yes?
Right. Yeah. Concerned Cinema Citizens Pushing Onward, or C-3PO is what I call it.
Oh, that's clever. Like the Star Wars thing.
Yeah, like you don't know what that is.
Yeah, no, I know what it is. So. Right. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do with the organization?
Yeah, well, what I do is I started these petitions and campaigns to sort of start suits against movie studios that I think misrepresent, you know, the movies that you pay your good money to see and disappoint you a lot.
I mean,
it started basically last year when I saw this trailer for this movie, XXX2, State of the Union.
Yeah.
And I was really excited to see it, and they used that song, Shoot the Thrill by AC/DC in
it. Yeah, yeah.
Get to the movie, not in the movie.
The song's not in the movie?
No.
That's
false advertising.
But
$11.
But that's just a song for the promo. I mean, what the hell difference does it make?
What the hell difference does it make? That creates the whole mood of the thing. I mean, it's like, if you take that out, you're destroying our myth. Cinema is our modern day myth.
All right. Okay. All right, Scott. Now, do you have an office? Where are you now?
I was working in an office over on Yucca, and then that sort of, apparently, if you don't pay a couple months in a row, it goes away.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so I'm just sort of crashing on my buddy's Mike's couch right now out in Tarzana, but you were supposed to have me on an hour ago, so I only have a few minutes because his mom's going to get off work from Cheesecake Factory.
All right.
Hold on. All right, I thought that was
his All right. So now is this your full-time job and whatever the hell it is you're doing with it?
It is, and I mean, you know, like, I don't make a lot of money doing this, so, like, I you know, got a job this summer just, like, teaching Hebrew school.
Really?
Like, part-time, yeah, but I'm not Jewish, so I'm, like, I'm spending, like, a lot of time just playing catch-up, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that language is hard.
All right, well, it's amazing you got the job. So now, I ran into you at the Grove Theater, and then at the Arclight.
Right.
You're definitely a man with a mission, and you were handing out pamphlets about, I guess, dealing with the similar thing you were just talking about, misleading teases.
Yeah.
And you had that you were going on and on about the Jennifer Aniston thing.
Yeah, this movie, The Breakup, that's out now. It's just got my, you know, I'm all PO'd about it because on the trailer you see her nude tush, her backside,
yeah.
right?
So yeah.
You figure that's the trailer, that's the tease.
Right.
Gonna see some full frontal.
Right.
When you get to, you know, sit down in the seat with your popcorn and your Junior Mints.
Yeah.
And you know what? No, it's just like, you know, when I went to, you know, Jeannie Lockman's graduation party, and she's just like, come to my party, and then she just turns out to be a big tease, and then she borrows my Peter Gabriel CD, and she never gives it back.
Right.
So if you want to give, you know, your $11 or $14 for the cinematic equivalent of having your CD ripped off and, you know, feeling sexually inadequate for the rest of your life, go see The Breakup.
All right, okay.
I'm not going to stop you.
All right.
I have a problem with, I mean, you were taking issue with An Inconvenient Truth, that Al Gore movie earlier, and I have a big problem with that, too.
What?
I mean, it's like, you know, everyone's talking about, well, is it right, the meat industry, blah, blah, never mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, how about this? How about a movie about global warming released by Paramount Classics, and you get the mountain with the ice cap peak at the beginning in the logo, and they don't melt the ice off the mountain?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's about global warming, you know? They did that, Universal did it with Waterworld.
Yeah.
The ice caps are melting. The globe melts at the beginning of it, you know? Do the math, people.
All right. All right. Well, look, I appreciate what you're doing. I think it's important.
Yeah. I get that from your giggling.
No, but I mean, it's kind of funny. You're all excited about something that a lot of people don't get angry about.
Kind of not funny. You know, Mission Impossible 3. Mission Impossible. Third time, the mission is possible. It's done in the end, you know?
Yeah.
Guess what? People aren't going to see it not because of the Scientology thing, not because of the baby thing. It's because it's getting old. Nice try, Tom Cruise. Nice try, Blanco Nino. Too bad your ass got sacked.
All right, okay.
No one's going to see it.
All right, Scott Dalvis, I appreciate you being here. Are you going to the movies this weekend or what?
Yeah, probably going to go see Breakup again.
Because the tush was enough, I guess.
That's good. Vince Vaughn is funny in it, and you know, Jon Favreau is in it. He's very large. I mean, he should break up with donuts. Yeah. I don't know what's going on with that guy.
So he's putting on a little weight.
Yeah, that was a joke.
No, it's funny. All right, Scott, thank you. We're going to do this again. I can feel it.
All right, Mike's mom's coming. Hold on. Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye.
All right, bye.
What was that? Okay. All right. So now we in studio we have the creator of Laughing Liberally. She is a very prodigious. Is that the word I want? Blogger. Prolific.
Prolific. Right.
Prolific blogger. She's a filmmaker. She's doing stand up as well now. Katie Halper is here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So now, how did you get involved with this? I mean, what were you doing before you decided to get involved with creating this thing?
Well, I'm a co-creator, and my co-creator, Justin Krebs.
Yeah, I know Justin. The new Bill Graham.
Right, the new Bill Graham. Yeah. The left Bill Graham.
Yeah.
He started something, co-founded something called Drinking Liberally, which is this drinking group that happens all across the country. There are now 140 chapters. And I was doing comedy at this space that we run called The Tank.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually born out of kind of an accident because one of the events we had was canceled last minute and we decided to do a political comedy show. So it was totally dysfunctional.
Right. So it just sort of came about.
Yeah.
And who was on that original political comedy show?
Baratunde Thurston and I were in it.
Uh-huh.
And Baratunde and I were both in the town hall show, which was nice.
Who?
Baratunde Thurston. He's based in Boston.
I have no idea who that guy is. I am out of the loop, my friends. So what about this drinking liberally thing? What is that? Is that encouraging alcoholism among the left so they can deal with the...
Exactly.
Yeah?
Because, you know...
You need to. You need to take the edge off.
Catch up.
That's right.
No, it's just a place for people to talk. They don't even need to talk about politics. Sometimes they do. I mean, they serve different functions in different cities because in New York City, you're not really... You don't feel that alone probably if you're a liberal. So you don't have to talk about politics.
Exactly,
But in some, you know, other state...
Yeah, so it provides a certain amount of relief.
Right.
I get their invitations all the time. I don't even know how I got on the mailing, but they're very...
Persistent.
Really. And I don't drink anymore, but I tell you, I go to my mailbox and there's 50 things.
Trying to lure you back.
Exactly. The devil is trying to lure me back. So how long have you been doing comedy?
Just a couple of years. I didn't think... I was actually almost going to follow in Dean's footsteps, I guess. I thought I'd go into human rights law.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And is there still a... did you go to law school?
No, no, no.
Oh, so you haven't even gotten...
Yeah, I'm like 2 years old, so...
How old are you? Is that a bad question?
I'm going to be 25.
Oh, that's
respectable.
You're gaining some wisdom.
Yeah.
So
it's
when
an old maid.
I read some of your blog, you sort of take on... You were talking about the Stephen Colbert performance.
Right.
How it's misunderstood.
Right.
And what was the angle on that?
Well, he's really a friend of the administration, as am I.
Uh-huh. How so?
And, I found him laughing liberally, but I've had a total change of heart.
Uh-huh.
Partly because I realized that what I think is total idiocy on the part of Bush is actually ingenious slam poetry.
Right.
If you take what he says and you put it into the form of slam poem,
uh-huh.
something really beautiful happens.
Is that true?
Yeah. I'm going to do some of that tomorrow night, actually.
Why don't you lay a little on us now?
Lay a little? Let's see.
Do you have it? Do you need it on paper?
No, I could do some. What's my favorite? My favorite one is, yeah. I'm honored to shake the hand of a brave Iraqi citizen who had his hand cut off by Saddam Hussein.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, so you're just
going to read.
Yeah,
it works. I think it really works.
At least he's got a future.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other things you find engaging these days? What else are you going to be talking about tomorrow night?
Maybe the Pope's visit to Auschwitz. I have a little problem with a born-again Nazi being
uh-huh.
the leader of the Christian world.
Yeah, that, I would say so. When did he go to Auschwitz? Just recently?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was like a final stop on a cruise or something.
Was he going back there to fondly recollect?
Yeah, remember the days?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't blame him. Like, there were three people resisting in Germany, and I don't know if I would have been able to resist.
Right.
Luckily, I'm Jewish, so I wouldn't have had to have made that hard decision.
Right.
But it just seems a little inconsistent to be God's messenger on earth and a former Nazi.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
The Vatican has terrible PR, people.
They're apparently a lot more forgiving than most other people.
Right.
I find that there are good Germans in almost any business that you work in. Do you realize that? That, you know, you all, and I'm just using that as a metaphor, but, you know, people who work in unjust business environments that are like, you know, this place sucks and they're screwing you and you shouldn't have been fired or whatever.
Right.
It's like, well, can you help me out?
Oh,
dude,
right.
I don't know. You know, I kind of got into my health coverage. I got to keep that, you know. Yeah, where did you work before you got this gig?
I was actually working at this documentary production house, and they just came out with that documentary Baghdad ER.
I saw that. So are they involved with HBO? Because Sheila Nevins produced that.
Right.
Yeah.
They make, they're a media education center, and they're also a production house, and they make lots of documentaries for HBO and for PBS, and I used to be their development director.
Really? Which ones were you involved with?
We actually did Embedded, Tim Robbins' play.
I saw that.
Yeah, we made a video of it.
I saw that, and I have the. I actually have the video.
Yeah.
So your name's on there.
Yeah.
So if I went and looked at my Embedded video, you'd be right there.
Yeah.
It would say
Halper.
Katie Halper,
co-producer.
Tim Robbins is a good guy. He was he's always been a big fan of the show. We've had him on a couple of times. I went and saw his new play, the 1984 play. Did you see that?
No.
I don't know if he's bringing it to New York or not. I imagine he's workshopping it, but he wrote a play based on 1984.
Oh, wow.
And what other ones did you do over there?
Well, being development director, it's really about writing,
sure.
raising funds.
Yeah? So you're good with that?
Terrible. I don't know why I got the job, honestly. I sunk them. We almost went under.
Because of you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You should get a job with Danny Goldberg. Do you know Danny Goldberg?
Yes. I'll send him my resume.
You should send him your resume.
I'll send him my grant.
He's a great guy. Great guy.
Oh, my God. Well, look, he's had a change of heart.
No, man. You're going to...
Come on.
Look at the positive.
We're not supposed to say bad things about him.
Silence.
Okay, good. Look, we are going to give away one more set of tickets here. If you call 877-520-1150, tell Justin Mark said to give me two tickets. He'll give you two tickets. If you go to the theater and walk up and say Condi to the ticket salesperson, you will be given half price off at the Wadsworth Theater, 11301 Wilshire Boulevard, KTLK.com. For all the information on Laughing Liberally, myself, Rick Overton, Will Durst, Jim David Shang, James Adomian, Dean Obadala, and Katie Halper, thank you for being in studio with us and giving us a little history. We'll see you tomorrow night.
He's not a real cowboy, but he is one heck of a stud. Mark Maron.
Thank you. Where'd that come from? That was very nice. That made me feel, it reaffirmed my masculinity.
It's from Midnight Cowboy. It's about, I'm sorry, man.
So now you're calling me gay?
Well, you're listening to like a male prostitute, maybe.
I don't mind it.
Doesn't mean you're gay. It just means you prostitute yourself. And all.
I don't mind being called gay. It's fine. It's fine with me. It's not going to hurt me. You know, I'm not afraid.
Couldn't hurt. Couldn't hurt at all, no.
I'm not in any way sexually ambiguous about who I am and where I stand in the world. Although, I listened to the Decemberists. I really love this band, and I forget that there is part of me that is pretty rooted in that weird 80s, not weird, but 80s British pop. That was a little gay, I got to be honest with you. It was a little gay. And this haircut that I have now, by no design of my own, is a little gay. So a little bit sort of, you know, British 1980s, a little gay. And I'm not ashamed of it. I'm wearing Madras shorts, which is not gay, but it's gay. You know what I mean? There's a differentiation. And I'm going to get email about this. This is going to cause trouble. This is exactly. Jim David couldn't remember what we got in a fight about, and I didn't want to press it because I would have it would have reopened it. It was about misusing that word or assuming that someone will behave a certain way because they're homosexual. And he said that would you expect Chris Rock to behave a certain way because he's black? And you know, on some level. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to stereotype things, but sometimes stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason. The reason they're funny is because some of them resonate. Doesn't mean they're right. Doesn't mean they're wrong. Means they're funny and hurtful, but funny and revealing.
I expect Chris Rock to act gay because he's black.
That's interesting because he would probably have issue with that. He would probably have a little bit of an issue with that.
And then we'd have a entertaining conversation for radio.
I think we're having an entertaining conversation right now. We didn't get too heavy today because we had a lot of comedy, and there are reasons to get heavy, but I think we'll wait till next week to get heavy, if that's okay. Next week we have some of our regular guests coming in, a couple of new guests going to be on board. We're going to have John Amato next week from Crooks and Liars. I think Svetlana is going to be back. Hopefully we can get our boy Jeff DiCarlo on the phone for one reason or another. Jello Biafra is going to be... We're going to talk to him next week. And Robert Scheer, the journalist, who I'm very excited to talk to, got a lot of homework to do this weekend. I'm still working on J.R. Norton's book, Saving General Washington. I read books slowly. Are you a fast reader? I don't know how the hell people read fast.
I'm a fast reader when I read, but I haven't read in a while.
Like, when I read news, I'm fast. But when I actually have to, you know, work through a book, like, I just stalled out on American Theocracy, dude. Stalled out. Was completely engaged, doing the heavy underlining, and then I just started petering out at around page 90. I just didn't hang in. And there's a lot more of it to get through. And it's important stuff.
Maybe it wasn't that entertaining, though.
It was entertaining.
Was it well written?
Oh, it's genius. It's genius. It was too big of a commitment. And you really got to have it next to the bed and reading every day. But I get such an influx of books that, like, I'm one of these people. I read a book like that, American Theocracy. I read the first 90 pages. I get it. I get the idea. I know where we're going with this. And that's enough. I understand. It's whether or not you want to really be educated on the nuances and the facts and how well you catalog that. But I've said this before. I don't retain that well. I retain broad strokes, but while I'm reading it, I feel like I'm thinking what is written, and that is a good feeling. It's sort of like a drug. Books are drugs. Can we establish that? And the Decemberists, I'm going to listen to the hell out of that. I don't care what it indicates about me. It's like a weird mixture of Violent Femmes, R.E.M., and Squeeze-ish British pop.
So are they
and maritime songs.
Are they Bolsheviks?
I don't know where they are. I don't know anything about them. They come from Portland. Somebody sent them to me on a big group mix.
Weren't the Decemberists Bolsheviks? Or am I thinking the October Revolution?
Why do you got to make me feel stupid? I hadn't looked it up yet. I had planned to look up the Decemberists, but I hadn't.
We need the bloggers to get on this immediately.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Decemberists.
Dude, I was on the blog last night. Not a good sign.
I know. I saw that.
Not a good sign.
I was embarrassed for you. I felt bad for you.
Come on. That's why I got involved with it. Where's Mishnah?
Where was happening at that time of night?
That's why it happened, because somebody on the blog, independent speculative investigator, Izzy, said that she was embarrassed for me because of my interview with Bob Weir. And I said, poo-poo on you. There's no reason I can't act childlike and full of fan-like fawning if I feel that way. It's my show, she said. And then she says, I just want the show to succeed. What the hell? You think anyone's judging the damn show on hey, I don't know, that Mark got a little gushy with the Bob Weir interview. I think this show's going to go down the toilet.
You get gushy all the time. Nobody calls you on it. I don't. Exactly. I don't see anything wrong with it.
I do. I get gushy all the time.
Well, off and on, yeah. Did I tell you you have gush?
Did I tell you I love you, man?
You have gush qualities.
Have I told you that? Let's do these jokes before we run out of time. Come on. Come on. Short order news. Do it, Andy. All right. A report issued by the Food and Drug Administration says America's restaurants need to shrink food portions to fight obesity. 64% of Americans are overweight and 30% are obese, but 99% of them are going to start eating better and exercising more starting next week. And this time they mean it. Uh-huh. According to the FDA, burgers, fries, and pizza are top three foods causing obesity, although KFC is determined to unseat them with its new chicken cheese potato bowl. All right. Hey, New York City was stunned this week to find that its share of federal anti-terror funds was slashed nearly in half by bureaucrats who said it has no national icons to protect and lousy defense plans. The cut in Homeland Security money means New York's anti-terrorist Ring of Steel system will not be funded. The Ring of Steel included surveillance cameras, computerized license plate readers, and an omnipresent droning monotone voice that says, "Obey, obey, obey," on a continuous loop. Here we go. The Academy of Sex and Relationships announced they're going to open a sex theme park in the heart of London. The sex park will be modeled after one of the great amusement areas of modern times, 42nd Street in the 1970s. That's a short order news. Have a good weekend. I'll see some of you at the show at the Wadsworth. You have a good weekend, Jim.
Happy birthday, Heather.
Aw. Good night, sheeple. Happy birthday, Heather.